I'm Laura. I'm an alcoholic. Laura. My sobriety date is November 27th of 2009, and I have a sponsor. I have a home group. It's the Tuesday night Big Book Study at 3333, and I have a sponsor, and I'm available to sponsor others. This was my home group for a really long time. I got sober in the young people's group, and it's really nice to see a lot of familiar faces, like a lot of familiar faces. And some of you guys have seen me like on day one, which is actually really cool because I haven't seen some of you guys for a while. But so I don't like speaking. It's one of those things that I really don't like. Like some people in AA like say they love speaking. My first sponsor, she like loved speaking. She would get up here and she'd be like, oh, I just love it up here. And that's not my experience. I don't care for this, but when I'm asked to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous, the answer is yes, no matter how I feel, right? And I think it's important to say that because before I got sober, and when I was new too, I thought that if I didn't want to do something, that I couldn't do it, right? That is not the case. And if you don't like take anything else away from what I say tonight, just know that like, if I can get up here and speak, and if I can stay sober, and I can, you know, get a sponsor and work the steps, like, you can too, you know? And I like John, like, thank you so much for that lead, because I also was an avoider, right? Like, I avoided and avoided and procrastinated coming here. Because to be honest, like, if I'm really honest with myself, I knew I was an alcoholic for a long time before I ever came here. You know, I would sit in my room, and I would just, like, you know, shades drawn, and I would sit there with, like, a vodka bottle, like, and I'd just be drinking, like, out of the vodka bottle, and I'd be Googling, like, symptoms of alcoholism, and, like, then I'd be like, oh my God, I check off like 8 of those 10 boxes. Let me take a shot to forget that. Like, you know, and I would just be like, you know, so I knew like deep down that I was an alcoholic, but I didn't want to admit it. I didn't want to do anything about it. I certainly didn't want to come to a place where anybody was going to say anything to me about my drinking. I didn't want to stop drinking. But I ended up here and, you know, I've been here ever since and my life is incredible today. It's not perfect, but I have a really awesome, great life. And so a little bit about me. I grew up here in Tampa. My parents were married for 40 plus years. I come from like a nice, good family. You know, they're not, I guess they're normal. I mean, no family's normal, but like I wasn't exposed to any like violence or, you know, craziness. My mom was a stay-at-home mom until I was 10. I have a younger brother. He was a valedictorian in high school, like overachiever. You know, he was really, you know, we did sports, we did activities, we did, you know, swimming lessons, and we didn't have a lot of money, but like we were just happy. You know, we were like a happy, nice, normal family. And my dad worked 2 jobs to support us, and, you know, like we never wanted for anything. And, but regardless of all that love and attention, and like, you know, I got home cooked meals and, you know, all that help with my homework, I always felt just different. And I feel like I hear a lot of people say that. And as soon as people would say that in here, I could immediately relate and I understood exactly what they were talking about. I remember being like 4 years old and I would just like literally 4 or 5 years old and I would lay in bed and I'd be like, what's gonna happen when I like grow up and become an adult and have to like get a job? And I would be like really worried about that at 5 or 6. Like I think I was in kindergarten or first grade and I would just lay in bed at night. And I actually like, they had to take me to the doctor and they were like, oh, she has insomnia. Like at the age of 5 and 6, because I would just lay there worrying about stuff. Like, how am I gonna, you know, get a job? And like, how am I gonna learn how to drive a car? And like, what if an airplane crashes on our house? And so I was just like a worrier. Like I could have used a drink back then. And I didn't know that that's what was wrong with me, but I was just always nervous. I was always like, you know, I had a crazy, like, nonstop imagination. And I would just, you know, use it to create scenarios that, you know, freaked me out. So, you know, I grew up feeling different. I always gravitated towards, like, older kids. Like, I liked adults. I liked older kids. I felt like I could talk to them. I didn't feel comfortable around my peers or, like, kids my own age. I remember I took ballet lessons when I was, like, probably the same age, like, 5 or 6, and I had, like, paralyzing stage fright because I was afraid something terrible was going to happen. Like, I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, fail or whatever. And, of course, what happened was I slipped and fell, like, in the middle of the recital, And I was like, see, I was right. Like, you know, I shouldn't have done that or whatever. But what I actually remember about that now, looking back years later, is that I slipped and fell and I got up and kept trying to dance and the entire crowd like cheered, right? And so I think about that experience sometimes now whenever I like am like feeling self-conscious or don't want to do something, you know, or I think like, oh, everyone's going to judge me or, you know, laugh at me or whatever. And like, that's just not the case. And that hasn't been my experience. That hasn't been my experience in AA and it hasn't been my experience in life. Like I grew up and, you know, had this idea that people were like, you know, to be mistrusted and I was just so full of fear. But the truth of the matter is like, the majority of people, like, just, like, we, like, want to help each other. And like John was sharing about, like, there's this sense of, like, camaraderie and, you know, and I felt that immediately coming into these rooms. And so anyway, I had my first drink. I had my first drink when I think I was, like, 13 or 14. I didn't get drunk, though, until I was almost 18. I was 17. So before that, I had a lot of, like, anxiety, you know, depression, whatever, and but I was, like, afraid to drink because I really wanted to do well in school. I wanted to be, like, a good kid, right? So, you know, my mom was like, if you want a scholarship to college, we don't have money to send you to college, like, you know, you need to do well in school. So, like, I kind of, like, prioritized and made school and, like, you know, like, throwing myself into my studies, like, that was, like, my whole identity. And I was too scared really to like do anything to jeopardize that. So I didn't try drinking or drugs, but I always hung out with the people who drank and did drugs because I was like, these are my people. Like I felt like comfortable around them even when I wasn't like drinking or smoking cigarettes or doing any of that. I was always like curious. I was intrigued and I was like, you know, I relate to them. And so finally when I was like 17, I had already locked myself in a scholarship to college. I was like a straight A student. I was doing really well in school. And I was like, all right, I've earned it. I'm gonna have a drink and see what happens. Like, fuck it. And so we were hanging out with my boyfriend at the time. And his brother was 12 years older than us. So I think he was like 30. And so I'm hanging out with my boyfriend at the time. We're both 17 and a bunch of 30-year-old guys. So they get like a couple cases of beer, and I had never had beer before, but I was like, okay, like I want to fit in and look cool. And we were supposed to have like a couple beers and then go to Ybor, because back then, I don't even think they really checked IDs. I don't remember, but like they had a plan to like get us in the club. They knew somebody at the door, or whatever. And oh, they would let you in if you were 18. Anyways, whatever. So we were gonna go to Ybor. Well, I got so wasted that we like couldn't even go to the club. Like I had one beer and it was disgusting. Like it wasn't even that cold. And I remember choking it down, and it wasn't Bud Light, it was like Bud Heavy. And I'm choking it down. I'm like, this is disgusting. Like why do people drink this? And then by the like I think it was by like the first half of the second beer, that thing happened that everyone talks about where I started to feel kind of like light and tingly and like warm and but like warm in a good way, not in like a hot, sweaty, nervous way that I usually was. And I was just like, oh God, this like feels really good. Like I felt light and like great. And I proceeded to finish that beer and then I asked for another one and then another one and then another one and another one. And then somebody gave me a joint and so I smoked some weed, which I had never done, and by the end of the night, I was just, like, laying on the hood of this guy's car, like, yelling and blacked out and being crazy, and they were like, what do we do with this girl? So they ended up just, like, picking me up like a sack of potatoes and taking me back to my mom's house and just, like, dumping me off unceremoniously in the front yard, and, like, I stumbled in the house, and my mom was like, are you drunk? Because I was, like I said, I was a good kid. Like, I didn't do that type of thing. And I was just like, yeah, you know, like, I'm wasted. And she was just like, go to bed. Like, I didn't get in trouble. You know, I didn't have any consequences. I woke up the next morning, and I was, like, hungover, I guess. I was nauseous, and I had a headache, and I was thirsty. But as I, like, lay there in the shower or whatever, you know, I'm, like, kind of hanging over, like, the toilet, like, just feeling, like, really out of it. I'm like, that's the secret. That's what people do. like, it, all of a sudden, like, it's almost like something clicked, and I was like, this is how people get through life. Because I had always, like, wondered. I was like, how do people deal with, like, death? How do people deal with, like, breakups? How do people deal with rejection or whatever, stress or anxiety? Like, I didn't understand. I had no, I would think about it every day. I was like, well, what am I going to do when this happens? What am I going to do when this happens? How am I going to act when this person dies? And so, like, when I discovered alcohol that next morning, as I'm, like, in the shower, I'm like, oh, this is the secret. So this is what people do. They just drink. This is how they deal with, like, their feelings. And I was like, if I ever get nervous again, or if I ever, like, have to deal with a really, like, terrible emotional, you know, situation, I'm just going to get drunk, because that's must be what everyone does. And I didn't realize it at the time, and it wasn't until I got into AA years later, but I made alcohol my higher power that day. And I didn't realize that that's what I was doing, but that's exactly what I was doing. I made alcohol my higher power, and I proceeded to use it accordingly. I looked at it as medicine. I looked at it as my friend. I looked at it as, you know, like, I think Bill Wilson talks about the great leveler, where, like, it puts you on an even playing field. Because, you know, I ended up, I didn't become a daily drinker right then. So 17 years old, whatever, you know, I had a full ride scholarship to college. I had just discovered drinking. And for, like, the first year of college, I was a pretty good student. Like, I went to class, I took notes, I didn't become a daily drinker after that night. I was an occasional drinker. My boyfriend at the time, he was, like, my second high school boyfriend. We dated throughout, like, my first year of college. He didn't like it when I drank. Actually, neither one of them liked it when I drank, now that I think about it. So they would be, like, they kind of, like, managed my drinking for me, because they'd be like, oh, you're cut off after, like, one. And I, like, just kind of, like, went with that, because I was like, okay, sounds good, you know, whatever. And so, like, first year of college, I'm dating this guy. He doesn't like me to get too drunk, so, like, I was able to kind of control my drinking that way. And I was, you know, trying to do well in school still. And then the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of college, the wheels just completely came off. Like a series of things happened. I broke up with the boyfriend, started hanging out with, like, a different crowd of people. I wasn't in class. I had gotten a job. And I had, like I finally had money, because I wasn't allowed to work when I was, like, growing up and, like, in, you know, in high school. My parents really wanted me to, like, do well in school, so they were like, you need to focus all your energy on that. And so all of a sudden now I had a job, so I had money. I was single, and my mom, like, she was kind of strict, but she had been kind of, like, leaving me alone. So all of a sudden I'm just like, I can do whatever I want. And what I wanted to do was, I wanted to go out every night, and I wanted to do like, shots of Bacardi, because I think back then we were drinking, like, Bacardi Limon or something. But, so we would just, like, get wasted, and then we would go to the club, and I was like, this is amazing. I have arrived. And, you know, all through that summer we partied, we went to concerts, we went to pool parties, we did all this, like, stuff as a big group. I was hanging out with this, like, big group of people. We smoked weed, we did this, we did that, whatever, and, so then, you know, like, fall comes around, I'm enrolled for fall classes, and the party's over, right? And except I, like, don't want to stop. So I'm now trying to, like, maintain working my part-time job. I was taking, like, five honors classes in college, and I'm trying to maintain, like, going out five nights a week. And then, like, I actually had a public speaking class. And like I said, I was terrified of public speaking. I was like, you know, I had been putting it off. Like, I didn't want to take the class. And I ended up getting a resentment at my public speaking teacher because he asked me to public speak. And I was just like, I'm quitting college. Like, this isn't for me. So I did. I didn't just quit the class. Like, I quit college. Like, I had a full paid scholarship to college. And I was just like, one day I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm done. And, like, I came home and told my mom that I quit college, and she's just like, well, if you quit college, like, you can't live here rent-free. And I was like, perfect. So I moved out on a $7 an hour job in a resentment, because I was working at Panera Bread. And I just, that was my life for, like, the next 4 years. I just, like, worked in hospitality, which I'm still in hospitality actually, but I but now like I'm living with these two girls and I'm working at this like $7 an hour job, and I would go out like every night. And I would go out like every single night. And sometimes I would have to be at the restaurant at like 6 a.m. to open the bakery. And I would come in like fresh with the like club stamps on my hand. And they had like the nickname of, I think they called me Rocks. They called me Rockstar. Because they were like, oh, you're always coming in like smelling like booze. Like you're a rock star. And I was just like, yeah, I'm a rock star. And I didn't know it at the time, but they were like, it was not a compliment. I thought I was so cool. I was like, yeah, I'm a party girl. And yeah, that's what I did for a long time. And then like I toned it down for a while because like I got in trouble at work. They sat me down and they were like, hey, you know, you keep coming in here like smelling like a brewery. You're always habitually 20 minutes late. Your coworkers are complaining about you. And I was just like, how dare you tell me that I'm not doing my job when I'm not doing my job, you know? But like I ended up just like, somehow I ended up turning it around there, and they gave me a promotion, which I still don't understand why, because I was like a 19-year-old like introvert with a burgeoning drinking problem and an anxiety disorder, but hey, like, and no experience in management, but they made me a manager. And so I did that for a while, and then I realized that like waking up early was just really interfering with my drinking. And I ended up getting a job as a server at this like local restaurant in South Tampa. So that was totally different because there you could drink openly. Like it wasn't a corporate restaurant, it was like a mom and pop restaurant. And so we would just like, you know, we would have glasses of wine and like to-go cups, and we would have, you know, it was just like, it was fine. You could just drink while you worked. And that was like that for like the first couple of years I worked there. And then one day they sat all of us down and they were like, okay, we're having some really like big issues with, you know, like the inventory. We're noticing there's like a lot of alcohol missing, and, you know, we put cameras in, and you guys just, we know you guys have been drinking, you know, and it's all forgiven, but you guys all need to stop. And everyone stopped except for me. Because I was like, what do you mean I can't drink while I work? Like, that's how I'm able to function and, like, talk to people. So I would, I started, like, what I called it was packing a lunch. I would just, like, put vodka in a water bottle, or I would put it in, like, a shampoo bottle, and I would take it to work with me because I was like, I can't be deprived of my alcohol. Like, I need this. This is my medicine. And, you know, like, I would get sat down, I would get, you know, in trouble for coming in hungover and just all kinds of craziness. And this just went on for a while, right? And I would have periods where, like, you know, John talked about it. There would be periods of time, this is probably when I was, like, 22, 23, where I'd be like, you know, I'm going to go on, like, a detox. I'm just going to, like, go on a juice cleanse. And I would, like, sit in my room and I'd make these, like, crazy to-do lists. And I'd be like, all right, so we're gonna start going to the gym, and we're gonna go back to school, and we're gonna do this, and we're gonna do that, and then we're gonna stop drinking so much. And then like two things down, it'd be like, go to the grocery store and buy more wine. And so like even my to-do lists were just like contradicting each other. I was like completely, I was confused. I was super confused, and I think even then, like, I knew that I was an alcoholic, and I just didn't want to be an alcoholic because that would mean that I had a problem with drinking and I couldn't drink. And that, like, scared me. And actually, at the time, I actually worked with a girl who, she had been sober, and she would talk to me about AA. And, like, looking back, I know now that she was trying to 12-step me. And she would talk to me all the time. She'd be like, yeah, I go to this meeting on Thursday nights, and I have a sponsor. And she'd be like, because she would see me, you know, I'd be slurring, and I'd be all crazy. And, like, my life wasn't, like, insanely unmanageable, too. Like, I was telling somebody this before the meeting. So, like, that was just, like, the drinking aspect of it. But, like, my life was so unmanageable. Like, I was telling someone before the meeting that I whenever I felt like I was getting in trouble at work, like, I was screwing up at work, I would just start dating my boss. Because I'd be like, oh, this is going to be good, like, job insurance. Instead of, like, you know, fixing my performance, or, like, not drinking or, like, showing up on time, I would just be like, I'm just going to start, like, dating my boss. It's fine. And that's – I would do that. And then, like, my roommates would be like, why do you always date your boss? your bosses, like multiple. And I'd be like, oh, you know, I have a thing for authority figures. Like, no, I just didn't, like, I was trying to manipulate them so that I, like, had, like, insurance and wouldn't, you know, be fired for being crazy. But, yeah, so anyway, just, you know, like, my solutions to my problems were worse than my problems. Like, let's just say that. Because I would get myself in these jackpots and crazy situations where I'd be at somebody's house and all of a sudden I'd, like, come out of a blackout and I'd be like, who are you? Why am I here? Like, you know, because my drinking progressed, right? I went from being, like, a binge drinker to being, like, a four-day-a-week drinker to being, like, a five-night-a-week drinker to being, like, a we're-going-to-take-one-night-off-to-recover drinker to being a we're-going-to-drink-every-night drinker because I needed some to go to sleep. I'd be like, oh, I need some wine to go to sleep, which eventually by the time I was, I think, like, 25, the last 2 years of my drinking, I got sober when I was 27. The last 2 years of my drinking, I drank, like, around the clock, like, and I remember, like, I dated a guy, and at the time, he would tell me, he'd be like, oh, you know, oh, and he was my roommate, too. That was the other crazy thing. Like, he was our neighbor, and we, like, moved in with him because we needed a third roommate. So one day, he was just, like, walking in our apartment building, and I was like, hey, do you want to live with us? Like, we didn't even know him, and he was like, sure. And he was an alcoholic, and then, of course, I started dating him, like, 2 weeks after he moved in with us, and he had a girlfriend. It was just very complicated. So, and he would drink, like, in the mornings, and he was a little older than us, and he also, like, had a government job, and he was a DJ. It was very, very confusing. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, like, I drink in the morning, and sometimes I take a Xanax to, like, take the edge off. And I was like, you can do that? Wow. And that's how I became a like, round-the-clock drinker, because he was like, oh, yeah, just do this and take this and, you know, mix this with that. And drugs are they are a part of my story, but my drug of choice was alcohol, like, absolutely alcohol. Like, I hit my bottom because of alcohol. But I also feel like, for me, like, it's not super important, like, what substance it is. It's about the alcoholism. Like, that's something that I didn't realize till I got here. It's not about the substance. It's not about the alcohol. It's about like, me. Like, I'm the problem. The alcohol is the symptom. I think that that's really important to say, because for a long time, I thought that if I could just stop drinking, that all of a sudden, my life would magically be great. And that just wasn't the case. And so in, I think it was 2007, my dad, who I was really close to, like, growing up, like, he was my friend. He was, like, the friend parent. He got really sick, like, really, really sick. And they told us that he was going to most likely pass away. And this was, like, something I had been dreading since I was, like, 4. So I remember being in, like, the hospital bathroom and, like, just doing, like, I had, like, a flask, and I'm doing, like, shots of just warm vodka, you know, to, like, cope, right? And at the time, my mom's like, you're being so strong. And it's because I was completely, like, blacked out and devoid of emotion. And he ended up going through, like, end-stage kidney failure. And I would have to, like, pick him up from his dialysis appointments. He didn't end up dying then, which was great. But he had, like, some, like, really terrible health problems. And I would have to, like, pick him up from dialysis. And it was awful, like, to see him so sick. So to cope with that, I would, you know, I would drink. And, like, I remember one time I got pulled over. He's in the car. He's really sick. I had a bottle of Xanax that, like, didn't belong to me. I had, like, wine in a coffee mug in my center console, and I was driving on a suspended license with, like, an expired tag and no insurance, and I was drunk, and I ran a red light at, like, 10, like, I think it was 10 a.m., and the cop pulled us over, and I immediately looked at my dad, and I was like, hey, can you hold these pills for me, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to get arrested, and my dad was like, what is going on? Like, are you okay? And I'll never forget the look on his face. And God bless him. He took the pills and, like, hid them for me. Like, you know, what would we do without our codependents? But, like, he was just like, what? He looked at me and he literally said, like, what the fuck is going on? And I was just like, we'll talk about it later. And anyway, that was the first time that my family kind of got a glimpse into what was going on, right? And it wasn't long after that before I had a car accident, and it was very minor. But I hit my head. They said I might have had a mild concussion. They gave me some pain medication. And, like, the next day I tried to go to work, and I was, like, wearing one shoe. I was drunk. I had taken, like, some kind of pain medication on top of what I normally was doing. Plus, I had had, like, a half a bottle of vodka. And my job fired me. And I had been there for, like, 5 years. And I was just like, you can't fire me. Like, I'm an institution here. What do you mean? And they were just like, you have a problem. Like, you need to get help. My boss actually sat me down and was like, you're an alcoholic. He's like, my mother was an alcoholic. And he's like, my first wife was an alcoholic. And I know alcoholics. And you're an alcoholic. And he's the first person to tell me I was an alcoholic. And this happened around the same time that my dad was like, what the hell is going on, you know? And so long story short, I do this thing where I try to stop for a little while. And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, I'll just take a break. And that just didn't work. And I just kept coming to work drunk. And they kept firing me or, like, suspending me or sending me home. And then finally one day, like, I was supposed to go to work. I think it was Halloween weekend. And because they had hired me back because I said I was going to get help, which I wasn't, and like we do. And it was Halloween weekend. And I guess I was getting ready. Like, we were dressing up that night and, like, bartending and serving in costumes. And I guess I was getting ready. And I used to, like, really like to wear fake eyelashes. I guess I tried to put on my fake eyelashes with nail polish because I couldn't find regular glue. And I ended up, like, gluing my eyes shut. And my solution to that was to take a nap. So I ended up, like, sleeping through the whole weekend. That was a Friday, I think. And the next thing I know, it's, like, Monday morning. And they're like, hey, Laura, you got fired from both of your jobs. And also the paramedics were here. And also my roommates were like, you can't, like, live here anymore if you're going to keep doing this. So I got kicked out of my house. And I ended up in the hospital. And this is where my story actually gets really cool. So, all right. The paramedics got called. I don't really remember 2009. Like, I remember my birthday in February, and then I got sober in November. But I know that the paramedics got called, like, I think they said, like, 8 or 9 times. I don't remember. I got Baker acted twice. I woke up in the psych ward demanding to speak to a supervisor. I was like, I need to speak to somebody. Like, I don't belong here. Because also, like, just, like, besides being drunk, like, I was just really entitled. Like, I thought that, like, you don't understand what I've been through, and you don't understand what, like, and I need to do this, so, like, don't question me and also give me what I want, was basically, like, my MO. But I ended up, the paramedics got called, and I had already been Baker acted twice, and so I started getting, like, super combative with them, and I'm just like, you can't Baker act me, I know the law, I'm not a threat to myself or others. And the paramedic was just like, you don't know what we can do. And then he looked at me, and all I remember is that he had really blue eyes, and he just said to me, when you sober up, call this number. And he gave me, like, a scrap of paper. And, like, I came out of a blackout. I was in the hospital, and I look down, and I still have this, like, crumpled up ball of paper. And on it, it said, it was, like, notebook paper. It said Melissa, and it had a phone number. So I didn't call the number, but somehow she found my hospital room. I ended up getting, like, I think I was in the ICU. I don't know. It was bad. I was in there for, like, 5 days. And she, the paramedic who responded to my 911 call, his girlfriend was a nurse at Tampa General, which was where I was staying. He somehow found out my information, gave it to her. She was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she came to my hospital room and talked to me for, like, a long time, and I was super out of it because they had given me, like, an IV of Ativan, and I was very confused. But I remember her talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm like, do you work for AA? Like, I don't understand. And she was just, I don't really remember what she said, but I know that when they released me into my parents' care, and my mom was like, the only way you're gonna live here on this inflatable mattress in my living room is if you go get some help. And so I was forced to call that number. And I called the number. And I was hoping she wouldn't pick up because I was like, I don't want anything to do with this. But she did. And she was like, oh my God, I'm so happy to hear from you, because it had been a few days. And she's like, I didn't think you were going to call. But she's like, meet me at this place called 3333. And my mom let me have the keys to my car, which they weren't letting me do, which they shouldn't have let me drive anyways, because I was still taking, like, withdrawal drugs. Because, like, by the time I stopped drinking, like, I would shake if I didn't drink, because that's how much I was drinking. And so I meet her at 3333, And I walk in, and it was like everything I imagined. There were people there who like kind of looked homeless, and it was kind of like just, it looked rough. I was like, all right, you know? But I was like, what else am I gonna do? Like, I don't have any other options. Like, I have to do this or I can't, you know, stay sober. And some old guy came up to me. They like poked me in the ribs too at the end of the meeting. I have no idea what anyone said. I don't remember any of it. But I do remember feeling like people wanted me there. And it had been a really long time before anyone had made me feel like they wanted me somewhere. Like I had felt very unwanted at every social function I had been invited to for years. Like I ruined everything. Like I didn't even get into it, but like I ruined birthdays, I ruined graduations, or I wouldn't show up to them. It was either or. But like I felt wanted and I felt like people actually cared about me. And after, you know, they poked me on the ribs to go pick up the white chip, this old guy came up to me and he's like, if you ever want a drink, just put that chip in your mouth. And I was like, that's weird. I don't understand what that means, but all right, whatever. These people in AA are weird. And then like, you know, the girl Melissa was like, all right, I want you to meet me tomorrow night at a women's meeting. I was like, all right, you know, so text me the directions, I'll meet you there. So I meet her there, and I'm running late, so I'm nervous, because I'm running late, I can't find the place, it's at a church, I get lost, I end up finally finding it, like, I park, I'm not sure where I'm going, and I see this lady in the parking lot, and kind of like John was saying, like, I kind of, like, went up to this lady, and I was like, excuse me, like, is this the way to AA? And she was like, are you new? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. Actually, I think I said to her, no, I went to a meeting the other day, I'm not new. I did not want to be new. So like we walk in and I walk in and I was like, there must be a mistake because everyone was like bright and shiny and happy and like hugging each other and talking about birthdays and like, oh, I'm going to so-and-so's after the meeting or like, you want to go get, you know, pancakes at IHOP or we're doing this or I'm going to so-and-so's baby shower next week. And like, it was crazy. I was like, I really thought I was in the wrong place. I was like, I think I accidentally walked into like a church group or something because these people don't look like alcoholics. Because I thought that alcoholics were like, you know, more like the crowd I had seen at 3333, like a little bit rough. And I was just like, you know, all right, so I'm clearly in the wrong spot. But then like people started talking and they would say things and I'm like, oh my gosh, like that actually sounds crazy. Like I can't believe that girl is saying that out loud. Like why is she sharing that? And like it was like crazy embarrassing stuff. And so after the meeting, they dragged me out to Village Inn reluctantly. I did not want to go. And they introduced me to this girl who was sitting there and she was in like a fuzzy pink sweater. And she looked like Reese Witherspoon from Legally Blonde. And she talked like her too. And I was like, they were like, oh, we want this girl to be your sponsor. They kind of like assigned me to her or they like introduced us, but they were like, oh, she'd be a good sponsor for you. And I'm like, anybody but this girl. Like, no, she looks way too perfect. She had like a huge, she just got engaged, had like a huge diamond ring. She's like super, super preppy, wearing like Tory Burch. And I'm like, yeah, no, like I'm more of like an art nerd. Like we're not going to get along. But she was my sponsor for 7 years and she saved my life. And she sat down with me and she said to me, I know what it's like to have to drink and you don't have to drink anymore. And there's a part in the big book where it talks about, it says there's something about it says the whole deportment of his demeanor, meaning like the sober alcoholic, shouts to the new man that he has an answer. And that is exactly what happened. Because she sat there and like she looked so perfect and put together, and then she told me the most insane, hideous story about like being like locked in a basement for 3 days and literally kidnapped, and like how she went missing and how she did this and that. And I was just like, you know, I think that this crazy girl might actually be able to help me, because the way she talked about things, I related to that. I had never been kidnapped or held, you know, hostage in a basement, but I understood that level of like depravity and craziness. And so I was intrigued because I wanted to know, how did she get from that to this? And so that hooked me. And I was like, all right, I guess we'll give it a try. Like, you know, and I remember thinking too, I kind of like almost thought about it like a 30-day free trial. I was like, I'll just try this out. And then if I don't like it, I'll just drink. It'll be fine. No one will know. And that was November 27th, 2009, and like by the grace of God and AA, like I haven't had a drink since. And what I can tell you is this, I came here reluctantly. I didn't go to treatment. I should have. They tried to send me to treatment like so many times. I'm like, nope, I'm not going. You know, like I came here super reluctantly. I got a sponsor reluctantly. I worked the steps reluctantly. I'm speaking tonight reluctantly, but like none of that matters. It doesn't matter how I feel. What matters is what I do. And like I think the most important thing I've learned is that it doesn't matter what I say even sometimes. Like it matters, my actions are what matters. And like that's been the most important lesson I've learned. And because of that, today, like I went from being somebody who my mom wouldn't even let me like have my own car keys, and now when she goes out of town, she lets me have like the keys to her house. When my dad passed away, which was something I had dreaded for like 30 years, you know, because he was like one of my best friends, like I went to his funeral and people from this program showed up. They showed up and they held my hand through that. People who weren't even sober anymore, who had relapsed, heard about it, and they showed up. And that's the power of this program. It was really like a huge spiritual experience for me. And I learned that like by being vulnerable and by doing the things that you guys are telling me to do and not being contrarian as like I've been described in the past, you know, and like actually just like being like, okay, I'll do it, you know, drop the rock, like, you know, accept and just do it. Like my life has become infinitely better than anything I could have even like possibly imagined. And it's the little things too. Like I actually can sleep at night. I couldn't do that. Like I have money in my bank account to buy groceries. I couldn't do that. I can go to the grocery store without having an anxiety attack. Couldn't do that. Like today I'm the general manager of a restaurant that I have like 130 employees. I used to be somebody who couldn't even go to work, like, or show up to work, like, you know, and that's what the power of this program gives us. But we always have to remember that, like, this is first, and we have to, like, I have to continue to do these things, talk to my sponsor, you know, sponsor other women, pray every day, and, like, no, my life hasn't been perfect. I've made a shitload of mistakes. Like, my license would continue to get suspended every year because I would forget to renew my tag up until, like, 2 years ago, and I'm 15 years sober almost. Like, so, yes, like, I've been unmanageable in some areas, like, the whole sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Like, some things have come really quickly to me, and some things have come really slowly to me. But, like, ultimately, I wouldn't trade my worst day of sobriety for my best day pre-sobriety. Like, it's been amazing what this program has given me, and I'm incredibly grateful to you guys, and thank you so much for listening to me.